We should. Can we take a picture?
Can we take this thing? Well, it takes pictures for us, yeah, but can we could probably also take a picture.
I just feel like we don't have pictures of us actually.
You should
doing
use
this.
Your. My God, this is okay. Wait.
I don't know where to look, like to look at me or to look at you.
I don't know.
I couldn't send more pictures because my phone is currently a block because I have too much stuff on it.
Yeah, mine wouldn't back up because I don't have enough.
Yeah, same.
iCloud, whatever.
Which is not real. That's not real.
I know. I was like, you're just trying to get me to pay more money, and it's annoying.
I'm glad Stuart's not listening right now. The cloud's not real. Have you seen that movie? And I can't remember, but it's like Cameron Diaz and Seth Rogen or something. Or no,
yes,
somebody.
And they're like, the cloud's up there.
It's up there. And she's like, but what is the cloud? And they're like, no one knows what the cloud
is. That is, and I don't even care how many times somebody explains it to me. That is what I believe the cloud is. It's up there. No one knows what it is. It's just magical.
I had a dream once that Christy and I got put, this is a true story, that you and I got put in charge of IT at the bank here. Because Stuart works for the banks and Charlotte's like a big banking city. And I had a dream that you and I, it was an anxiety dream of a different version, but it was basically that you and I were in charge of this IT system, but that everybody thought we knew what we were doing.
That's a terrible dream.
It really is. And you and I were both like, we don't know how to do any of this. And they were giving me like all these monitors, like Stuart has them like doing the matrix numbers. And they were like, can you... And then they were like saying words and I was like, I don't know how to do this. And they're like, we're paying you guys a lot of money to be here. And I was like, I am so sorry. We are not. And it didn't matter how much, they just made us feel guilty about the fact that we took this job. And I was like,
they gave it to us. It's their fault.
I don't know. But I just, a lot of my anxiety dreams are related to I have to pack something really quickly and others. It's like all my important childhood things around, but there's like a ship that's leaving that I have to get on, like a cruise ship, and I have to pack really fast. I have that dream most nights. And then there's this disappointment of
I have,
like, you and I could have just walked out, but I can't.
But no, we can't.
We can't. We're like trapped.
This is like the day that my therapist said to me, are you only doing these things that I'm telling you to do because you think that I'm going to like grade you?
Yes.
And I was like, yes.
Yes. 100%.
And shut up.
That's why I can't. I have gone to therapy, but we've talked about this on the podcast, but I don't currently go to therapy. And part of it is because I think I know, not that I know too much. That sounds really egotistical. I think that I know people pretty well. So I feel like I would try to like steer it in my way and not be honest.
Previously discussed in our book club that we had, okay. I'm a super manipulative person. So.
I don't think I'm manipulative.
I am.
Okay. Well, that's terrifying, but also because I'm your friend. So I just don't want to hear that. Do you really like me? Or do
I
you
try
just
try not to manipulate people, but it happens on occasion. Well, but like it
anyway,
happens.
I just
don't trust myself in therapy because of that.
Like if they made a look at me and they were like, oh, I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Because I'd be like, I have to get a good grade in this class. And therefore I'm gonna do the things that you want me to do, but it is not.
I think we should look up in the DSM if this is like psychopathy or whatever. Like we might be there.
We both are like some kind of paths. Some kind.
Also, can I tell you this is why I can't have kids? I'm moving it away, but it also adds to the psychopathy combo. I can't have kids because no, I can physically have them. Let me clarify to all of our listeners. But why I probably shouldn't is every time I get bored, which Christy knows I've been on kind of like a bored streak lately,
which really means
I need to start writing that book that's due next year, but whatever. So I'm on this bored streak. And so I booked a vacation to Carolina Beach today. So every time I get bored, I do one of two things. One, I won't mention, and two, Christina's the one. But the other two is I book holidays for myself that I can't afford. It's fantastic that I do that.
I want to know why you're not coming to St. Petersburg Beach instead of Carolina Beach.
Well, because St. Petersburg Beach is 10 hours away, and this beach is 2 hours away.
Yes, but I'm here.
No, it's true. I am coming to see, though, but we decided when it was. Oh, but that's, yeah, it was end of May, I think, because I'm doing the intensive in Atlanta. Yeah. Yes,
end of May. Yeah.
We should probably. So I am coming to St. Pete. When are you coming anywhere near my vicinity?
Actually, this is off podcast talk, but I have to talk to you about that later.
Oh, with some other band playing Greenville,
but no.
Ooh, I'm excited now. Josh Patterson of Rethinking Faith, who is our friend,
just drove past you.
He drove right past me.
He drove right past you. He's an ass.
Quick call out to Will Rose in Chapel Hill and Trip Fuller in Greensboro, who apparently forgot that I was in North Carolina and let Josh Patterson come. And then they went to some theology thing.
I know you weren't invited to any of this. I wouldn't
have been interested in it, but I would have gone.
You would have gone.
Look,
I'm just saying, they should have invited you.
Boys, I know that I have a vagina, but also I can talk theology. You know this. Also, do I like to flirt? Heck yes. Do I think a good flirt is fantastic? Also, one of my board activities is flirting a lot. Yes.
I don't know if this is helping you get an invitation. They are all married.
It was going to be the summary. It was going to be, but I'm not interested. And I like all of your, I've met Tripp's wife. I've not met the other two. I'm sure they're lovely.
I heard great things about
her. I talk about Stuart once every 3 seconds on this podcast. Okay. None of them can afford my fancy holiday. God, I haven't drank anything yet and I'm already unhinged.
You can tell.
Anyway.
Have you talked to another human being today? Because I have not.
No, I haven't. And you can tell.
I feel like that is obvious right now that we're you both like, tell. Hi, and I'm how are you?
I know. I need somebody just come flirt with me and take my vacation,
I need more social interaction.
I won't touch anyone. I won't even have an emotional affair. I just want someone to take me somewhere.
Please. I just want to hang out with a human being.
Get me out of this bookshelved room. Cool. So Christy and I are doing well. This actually really leads it very well into conclave, actually. Christy and I are in a conclave of our own creation. And as two extroverts, I love that Stuart's going to hear this, and I'm just shouting that someone please flirt with me and take me on vacation. He's literally in the other.
He's gonna get the you're gonna get the disappointed face. He's just gonna look at you with his disappointed face. Like,
he paid for this insane vacation. I wasn't me. Sure wasn't me. Okay, Our drinks today are
margaritas.
Margarita.
Which, can I just real quick? So I put it in a real margarita glass, and I'm mad about it. These are stupid.
Put it in a Montgomery biscuit thing. So after my wedding, I went to go show that.
Well, so I made it too strong.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Gosh, I love a margarita. So here's the deal. On a road trip and we were starting in Chattanooga, me and my friends from England/Finland. And
Stuart.
See, I'm clearly not going to steal your men. I can't even remember my own. Anyway, so we were going from Chattanooga to New Orleans. And in between is an unfortunate state called Alabama that you have to get to. And we really didn't have much by way of things to do in Alabama, but we were stopping along the way. And so we found the Montgomery, I'm saying this very Southern and I can't help it, Montgomery biscuits. I don't know how
Montgomery biscuits.
Montgomery biscuits. There are some words I can't not do it. Skull! So the biscuits, they throw biscuits in aluminum foil at you like they shoot things out of a cannon. It's a minor division baseball team, but their theme is biscuits rise. And we bought so much merch. I know. We bought so much merchandise. We were two of like 10 people in that stadium.
I have been hearing about the Montgomery biscuits for the past.
I'm influencing how you say that.
I can't. Well, how do you not say Montgomery without saying it?
Montgomery.
Montgomery. Like
Montgomery. You can say it more Southern and say Montgomery.
Montgomery.
Like, just leave the T out. Like Atlanta.
I've literally been hearing about this since, when did you get married?
2017.
Okay, so I've been hearing about this since 2018. So I want you guys to know that I have been hearing about this
More than New Orleans. I feel like you hear more about the biscuits than the actual destination.
Do you know that I could tell you zero stories about when you went to actual New Orleans? Like, when you guys were in New Orleans, I don't know anything. But the biscuits, I know I have heard.
And
yes.
Left a bar, which honestly, if you can survive a weekend in New Orleans and still be married or with someone, then that's a real feat in itself. But I come out and she's sitting on the hood of a New Orleans PD cop car and just chatting.
Just chatting with the cop.
We didn't have a car. No one has a car in New Orleans. Everybody's walking. So
yeah.
Those cops were basically just keeping people from fighting.
Yeah.
And she was just chatting. And I was like, we got to go. And he was like, are y'all all right? And I was like, we're drunk, but we're fine.
We're fine. Yeah. No,
the biscuits were the highlight.
To the point where, like, I get biscuit stuff in my algorithm, and I was not there. I didn't even know these people.
They're not even like the Savannah Bananas. They don't dance. They were just a really poor baseball team. But there was just something so ridiculous about the whole thing. When they started shooting the biscuits out of the cannon, I was like, this is a moment.
I think that this is something either I've only just become aware of or is a fairly new thing, but there are more and more of the like minor league baseball teams that have ridiculous mascot names and are making it like their thing. Because I've heard, so the one in Colorado Springs is like the Vibes or something.
That's terrible. Why would you do that?
And then there's one in, I think it's Seattle, and it's like the Seattle Flying Whales or something. Like,
cool.
They're all kind of unhinged. Like, that's just how they've decided to market themselves. And I think it's great.
But it's smart. I'm here for it. So smart. Yeah, because like when I was in Rome, Georgia, it was the Rome Braves were the minor league team in Rome.
Yeah.
But it's like the Braves still. And then here, Charlotte has a minor league team. You saw the stadium. It's actually pretty huge in downtown.
When I was growing up, it was the Sky Sox in Colorado, and I didn't understand for a long time. The Sky Sox.
What does that mean? That's like you just put words together. Right?
Well, and also like it's too close to like the White Sox, and so I would hear Sox, and I would just think people were talking about this weird minor league. And so, like, I'm glad that they're doing the weird stuff because it's better. I think
I do too. Like Charlotte is unfortunately the Knights, and their mascot is just this really drunk looking dragon. But, like, they do play the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, which if we ever play them again, I'm going to that game so I can get not a Knights shirt, but Jumbo a Jacksonville Shrimp. Jumbo Shrimp.
I support this.
I think that's a really good idea. Hey, guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks. Welcome. And we're drinking margs.
We're drinking really strong margaritas because I eyeballed it and it went badly.
We just wanted to.
I haven't talked to a human being all day, so I've been
just
grading.
Listed out all of my flaws. I forgot that other people listened. I just told you everything wrong with me.
90% of the time, Leah and I assume that the only listeners to this podcast are like three people that we know.
Yep.
And occasionally, when we are faced with the fact that other people listen, both of us go into an instant state of panic. So, listeners,
I hope that
you don't hate us.
I don't panic so much as think that when I meet people, they have a very preconceived notion, which is probably correct.
That's a probably correct notion.
If you come up to me and just start flirting profusely and talking about like going to like
biscuits.
Going to Cuba or something on vacation, I'm just going to be like, I love you.
Yeah, sure.
All right, Sam. I'm in love. Bye. And if you hand me a margarita, then it's done. We're all done for after that.
Oh, goodness.
We're drinking margaritas because we wanted to. And speaking of people who listened to, we met a new friend who is in our book group.
Yep.
And
Marvin,
who... it was awesome, and we love Marvin now.
Yeah.
So if you want he's in the club now. That's all it takes.
It like, really.
Stuart was easy. There.
Stuart was there. Marvin was there.
Surprised us ish. Hard to surprise someone who's in the other room, but you know.
Well, and someone who gets notifications about people being like, "I've signed up." Stuart signed up.
We were surprised nonetheless.
But it was a good time. We had a great time,
really
and we're doing.
We talked 1984, and it was awesome. Yeah. And we really, I'm excited. Do we have any, like, even slight spoilers about what the book might be next time?
I don't think that we do.
That's fair. I saw that you put up the poll. I didn't know if anybody had responded.
I have not looked because I put it up and then I forgot.
What? Well, I can't do it because I have 9,000 million bitey bites on my phone that are preventing me from looking at. I couldn't even send you a picture of me drinking this. And I had lip gloss on.
Do you have mascara on?
I do. I do.
Mascara on. Guys, y'all, I'm sorry that you can't see pictures of this because she is dressed up for you today.
I really am not. Let me show you my pants. It's going to surprise you none. It's my Georgia pants that I pretty much.
That she's wearing her Georgia
pajama. My Georgia pants. Guys, guess what? I'm going back to school.
Leah, oh yeah. Hey, public congratulations. Leah is going to do yet another degree because that's who we are.
That's who we are. Because I told you I should add that to the board list. Yeah. Flirting, especially if you're Southern, but flirting generally.
Going back to school.
Going back to school and going on vacation. Who needs a baby? Who needs a baby?
Tell everybody what you're going to do.
Yeah, so I was going to go back for something insane, and then I decided not to. And Stuart said he would help fund this degree, so because I was like, I can't get any more. I don't know if I'm legally allowed to get any more student loans. Probably not. So I'm going. I got accepted to UGA, guys. I'm finally going to Georgia.
Leah's finally going to actually attend her.
I'm going to attend my college
favorite university.
Right.
She's like Rory Gilmore. She already has all the stuff.
I do. I'm ready. I did get into Georgia for my master's, but I went to Mercer instead because they gave me more money. So this isn't the first time I've been accepted, but I don't know what was in my brain at the time, but I was like, not going to do that. Probably money. But anyway, so yeah, I'm going to do a master's in higher ed admin at the University of Georgia. It's an online degree, but I figured that it would add to my resume, which is kind of good as opposed to just doing something completely outside the realm. And I've realized as I've gone along that like my skill set is not, it's just in academics. So might as well just bump up that. And I don't mind admin stuff. Like some people are like, I want to be in the classroom. Now I want to research. That will never end. Yeah. But I don't necessarily need to be in the classroom.
As a person who just finished mountains of grading today, I understand.
Like I want to be in the institution.
Yeah.
And I want to do things with students and I want to advise and I want to research. But like, if you want to like, let me do some paperwork or go be a face or something, I can do that. Like I can PR the hell.
I think it's very great. I think I'm really excited for you. And also because I am also me, I was like, Leah's going back to school.
Yeah. You started listening to you, didn't you?
I did.
You said ahem, and I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
I started looking at programs. It's fine. It's not, I mean, obviously it's too late for this coming year. So this is not a thing that I have to make a decision on anytime soon. Nor am I planning on quitting my job. I'm going to continue to work this job. It's not.
Oh, yeah. I'm still going to work for Mercer, too. Like, that's why I had to do an online thing.
This would be an additional fun time.
It'd just be another thing because I have so much time.
Right? Exactly.
Bill!
But it's, I don't know. It's a thing I've always wanted to do. And I found a program and I was like, ooh. Anyway, let's talk about Conclave.
Okay. I feel like you have something to tell me and you haven't told me and you're not telling me on the podcast. So anyway, Conclave. Yes, I watched it last night. By the way, today, guys, we're going to be talking about the Pope because the Pope recently passed away. And we are full disclosure Protestants talking about
super Protestant.
Super Protestant.
Super Protestant. Both of us are very Protestant. So this
Christy's a little less Protestant than me, but if we have to scale Protestantism.
I mean, I think that the desire to go to Episcopalian churches is then counterbalanced by my like latent Calvinism, you know?
You do have some Calvin stuff.
Yeah. So
I just want to go to a field and like,
and then there's the mystic who's like, let's just go into the desert and meditate.
Well, I don't want to do too much feeling stuff, though. Like, I still want a real sermon, but, like, we don't have to be in the building. And if you don't want to do, like, incense, I'm okay with that, too. Like, we can just, like, eat hot dogs and drink beer and talk about. So, basically, beer camp is my choice.
Beer camp. So, everybody come to beer camp because that is ideal for Leah.
Just need some academic speakers to show up.
You know what would be great is what we'll do is that I will acquire a thermal and I will just start walking around smoking everyone out with incense.
We still need to talk to Kristen about our
trip. Don't listen to this podcast. Don't.
He does. Ignore, he already told me he does. Ignore
the comment about the incense.
He just plays it at like 5,000 speed, which makes me just get anxiety dreams just by thinking of listening to anything. Can you
imagine listening to us talk faster than we do? It's fine.
Nah. So Conclave is not just what Christy and I have been doing today, clearly.
It is also our topic. Well, also, we decided, like, A, we wanted to talk about the Pope, but yeah. B, we both just watched Conclave, and so it's kind of a both and. So two Protestants talking about very Catholic
things. Two Protestants walk into a bedroom. Two Protestants
walk into a conclave and have thoughts.
Escaped. I felt everything they were feeling when they closed those doors. I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's like working from home.
Ralph Fiennes was phenomenal.
He was.
And all of his anxiety. And when he breaks down in the Pope's apartment, the Holy Father's apartment, I was like, yeah, I get that. You've been stuck with all these people.
I was just glad they had wine. Bickering. I was glad I'm not a smoker because the cigarettes freaked me out. And then it was like, I saw the people vaping at one stage. They were just vaping. And it just feels like the longest faculty meeting, which the longest faculty meeting I've ever been in, kid you not, listeners, was solid 5 hours at Edinburgh University. Nope. It was a special circumstance meeting. And that was a lot. So much so that a colleague of mine started sending each other GIFs and memes and then also just taking pictures of ourselves. So there's a picture of me in like this majestic room with all these oil paintings and like a bust behind me. And I'm just like, my hands are on my head like this.
Yeah.
So it was pretty fun. Anyway, so the conclave is basically, from my understanding, and again, we're going to preface everything in this that's from my understanding. And if you're Catholic and you're listening, please feel free to tell us different.
Yeah,
we don't know.
I almost tried to last minute get the one Catholic scholar I know to come visit our podcast to talk about things. And then I was like, don't ask somebody to be on a podcast 3 hours before it happens, Christine.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people in Edinburgh, but they all have kids that are Catholic scholars, but they have kids. And
she's in Philadelphia, but she studied with Julie Clegg, who's at Glasgow. So I know her through
Julie would be great. And then shout out, Julie is my Glasgow version, and then Lyndon Bickett is my Edinburgh version, but both of those are. Yeah. Quite far
Julie
away.
Was my second supervisor for the first few years, but then she was overwhelmed with many students because she's the only Catholic scholar at Glasgow. And so I had a little switch at the end, but she was fantastic and she was really helpful in a lot of ways.
Julie is a good friend. She was my colleague.
Yeah, one of her students lives in Philadelphia now. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, maybe I could ask her. But anyway, that was like 3 hours ago. But so yeah, we are not Catholic scholars and we know.
So the conclave is
more than the average person, but like less than any Catholic.
Is where they come together to pick the Pope. That I know. And it's a bunch of cardinals and they get locked up in Vatican City and then they pick a Pope.
And
they can't leave until they pick a Pope. And I think the new conclave is on May 7th, I think.
Yes, it starts on May 7th.
Yeah.
I know here's a couple of things that I know. The movie Conclave apparently was based off of a book that was written shortly after Francis was made Pope. I don't know what the fancy words
are. That tracks.
So,
pontificate was made the pontificate. I like that word a lot.
The Holy See. So a lot of the kind of specifics about Conclave, if you feel like there's allusions to Francis, then you are correct because it is. But a couple of kind of key factors is that it's super secretive. So like you can't go in and watch the Conclave happen. And so I know that some of the critiques.
Now we know why.
The movie were that like, that's not how it happens. Well, like, yeah, like maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Like.
Can I stop you right there, though? I know that you have these facts, but what's about the facts, though? Do we know, Stuart had this question because he watched it with me. He was like, it is super secretive. If the book was written, who wrote the book and how did they know the information?
There's a lot of information that we know because it's not like super secretive, like this information can't get out. It's super secretive in that like they can't.
When they're doing it.
It's like when a jury is sequestered. I think it's that same kind of concept. So like. you can't interact with them when they're doing it. They can probably talk about stuff later. They probably don't, though. Again, I don't have a lot of this information. Except, but, like, we know Ray how Ryan the ballot like works.
Getting information from the outside world from that one guy.
So that part, I think, was probably where the Catholics are like, this wouldn't happen, because he did get a lot of information from the outside world during the conclave, which is not supposed to happen.
Yeah, like that. He was the dean. He was like the head of. Yeah,
he was the. So he was also like the second man.
If you watch the Oscars, the guy was like, whoever was the host was like Conan or whatever, said if Ralph Fiennes doesn't win the Oscar, then he's just going to be Ralph from now. And he didn't. So he's Ralph. He's Ralph Fiennes. But yes, he was the head. He was like supposed to lead it. Mm-hmm. And the Pope had made sure that he couldn't. He wanted to leave that position.
He wanted to leave that position.
And the Pope made sure before he died that he wouldn't be able to leave that position.
Yes.
And we find out why later is that he is having a crisis of faith, which is why he wanted to leave. But then he basically like is kind of a bulldog when it comes to like finding out. I love that he was like yelling at that guy like, don't research anymore. Don't research anymore. And then he's like, I'm going to crawl behind the Pope's bed and find these secrets. I'm
going to break into the Pope's apartment and
just find some stuff.
It's fine. You know, and so like, yeah, I think there's a few, it's obviously dramatized for, because potentially it was a very boring process, right? They just sit in there and vote a bunch of times. You and I have been part of that lots of times. But like, I did appreciate, because it wasn't boring. It was so fascinating to think about a couple of things. One is the idea, or how much they hold to the idea of this being an appointed man of God. Like, is God directing them to appoint a certain pope or not? And you could see some of them clearly were like, that is what it is. And some of them were not like that, you know? And I think Ralph Fiennes was trying to lean towards the like, if God wants this person to be pope, then God will make that person pope. But as like he got information, clearly he was like, well, that person can't be pope. Like, I need to do something about this.
They had very interesting rules for that too, because there was a couple of people who get disqualified for reasons. Mm-hmm. And you see those reasons kind of unfold. But some of them were relatively far in the past things that had happened. And Ralph Fiennes made a real point in a sermon that he gives to say, like, you know, this is a person who is a human and that they can make mistakes and that, you know, but it quickly becomes clear that you really can't have made too many mistakes.
I actually thought that people know about. So essentially, not to spoil too much of it, but I'm just going to say, essentially, there's one guy who becomes
pope,
who's up for becoming pope, that they find out has had a child with a nun in the past.
I was trying to go around it.
I think this is an important thing to think about, because that man, they had earlier been talking about how he was potentially going to be one of the more progressive options and like continue in the former pope's legacy of like moving the church forward.
Except he didn't like gay people.
Except that I can't remember if it was Stanley Tucci or Ralph Fiennes that says, but he thinks that
it was Stanley Tucci.
Homosexuals should be put in prison and then go to hell. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that he has essentially a sexual sin that eventually disqualifies him, but he's against that.
What he thinks is that. What he
thinks is that. Yeah, like it really speaks to the like ideas of hypocrisy and like...
You get a lot of insight into what they deem to be important, and it feels like it was very much women, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce gets brought up a lot. Mm-hmm. Abortion gets brought up some, and then homosexuality, as they say it, gets brought up a lot as well. Yeah. It's interesting because there's one scene that I thought was really peculiar, well, not peculiar, but interesting, but the Stanley Tucci saying, I think these are the things I stand on. If I'm going to become Pope, these are the things. And he's very progressive in his views.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentions women. I want women to participate more. And they were okay with everything.
Let's not mention that.
Let's not do the women's stuff.
Okay,
here we go. So we're, you know, all the other stuff that I mentioned was okay, but the women's stuff was too far.
It's so fascinating. I did really appreciate this in terms of, because I think that, I'm not saying the sentence very well, but I think that there's a lot of kind of if you're progressive, then you're for these X, Y, and Z things. And if you're conservative, you're against X, Y, and Z things. And this really shows you that, like, there's a lot of people who are kind of all over the place in this mix. And I think especially when you're thinking about it in terms of who's up actually in real life, who's up for Pope now, it's the same thing. Like, there are some people who, in some respects, it would be a kind of signal that the church wants to move forward and be more progressive, like with Francis, and continue on that track. And then there are other ways that it could signal that it wants to return to more traditional, like, Benedict stuff. But
there's a real division you see between, there's a guy who's, like, clearly very conservative in his social views, but then also conservative in that he wants to bring the mass back to, like, Latin and stuff. So it's not just social stuff. Some of it's, like, completely
just, like really
church structure stuff. Yeah. And there's other people, like Stanley Tucci's character, who are honestly probably too far left for where the church is. So there's a real too far left for me, but, like, far left for where these popes are sitting. Like, and so it's interesting because you see the, like, you agree. Well, at least I agree with Stanley Tucci, but it didn't matter because if the church isn't, and I've seen this actually, I thought a lot about this when I started doing my, I have had such an interesting shift in reaction since I've been doing the conversion therapy book. Like, I've had people, when I've applied to some jobs, suggest, like, taking that off of my resume. Mm-hmm. And I certainly have been passed over for at least one job that was because of that book.
Yeah.
That I'm going to still
write. It's not even out yet. Which
it's not even out yet. Honestly, I haven't even read it. Like, but, like, it's not, I mean, even, I'm still it's reading. Just
that you're like, hey, I'm going to research this. And they're like, then we're not going to hire you.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I think we float in circles that are echo chambers sometimes where we think that we are a place that some of us are, but that a lot of other people aren't. And I think sex and gender in the sort of whatever traditional sense, whatever academic sense you want to see that, is something that hits in a different way. Like, sex is in the act of sex, I should say, hits in a different way than other social issues. And I think you see that so blatantly in this when they talk about some of the stuff that gets people.
Well, and I think that it's not even just that issue, but there's something else that's mentioned in the movie that's also part of the conversations going on right now about the actual Pope, and that is the African Pope. Stanley Tucci says something that's incorrect in the movie. He says that this would be the first African Pope in the history of the church, and that is not correct because the first three popes were all African.
Somebody did some research.
From,
like, North Africa, though?
From North Africa. They were from Tunisia somewhere else.
Sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, there was another. So the last time, and I will admit this has been a very long, but the last time there was an African Pope was 464. This has been a really long time.
This is, like, early church. So,
100% agree with that. But it is incorrect to say that an African Pope would be the first Pope. First African.
Well, I guess maybe they have a different timeline because everyone says, like, Peter was.
No, I think the movie's just wrong. Like,
okay, all right.
Because I think most people just assume that there haven't been any African popes. You know, like,
oh, it's a European. Sub-Saharan Africa maybe is a better way to say it.
I don't think that. I mean, Northern Africa. That it's like the Roman Empire part.
I was going to say that's sort of the hotbed of that early church.
The early church was all there. Okay. I know this because I've taught this plenty of times. But every time I tell my students that Augustine was an African man, they lose their whole mind goes, like, blown because everybody just assumes that this early church was still European, which doesn't actually make a ton of sense. But, like, they weren't. So. There is a kind of general, like, we've all forgotten that part of the early church, right? That it's centralized in Africa, that we had a bunch of that. But I think the reason that people are so kind of fixated on this, so Francis was the first pope from the Americas, and he's the first Jesuit pope. And a lot of that is why he was progressive and why his concern was for the poor. And the
theology
like
in the house.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's actually a liberation theologian, right alongside Gutierrez and Leonardo Boff. And so there's this concept that we have, I think, especially as Americans, that if we have another racial minority pope, that would be a good thing. But one of the popes from Africa, or one of the options from Africa, is super conservative, like super, super conservative. I keep seeing people being like, ooh, wouldn't this be great? And I'm like, no, the race thing is not the only thing. You have to look. So I think there's a lot of ways that we think.
It's interesting how that
just inherently think like this means progressive and this means conservative, and we don't look for any of the other things. And like you were saying, like their stance on LGBTQ issues may not be perfect, but it is more progressive than where the church has been. Or
yeah, they really, I think in the movie, and honestly, if you look at some of the scholarship, not all, but some that comes out of Latin America, Africa, in terms of some of this stuff on social issues, it does seem that Africa leans a little more, and I would say sub-Saharan Africa, leans a little more conservative than Latin America in terms of some of the academic theology. But that could just be the stuff that I'm reading. Like, I have read some stuff from South Africa about reconciliation stuff that's more progressive. But in general, it's an interesting thing, because both of those areas were heavily European colonized and then evangelized, and they just really took it in different directions. Like, but I do think it's a caricature in the movie.
Yeah,
like they sort of
caricature in the movie. But I do think that it's something that we have to be thoughtful of, because I feel like we fall into this as well. Like, I've seen a lot of the discourse around like who's up for Pope kind of just coming to a stop at like, ooh, it'd be great if we had our first African Pope. There's two that have had their names thrown out there, and one is more conservative than the other one. But like, it is one of those times when it's just like, nope, like we need to have more nuance in our conversations about this than just wanting.
And then there's pizza.
The visual. Pizza Bella.
Bella.
Which I also want to remind people that he would not be Pope Pizza Bella. That's not how that works.
No, they do get to pick their own name.
They would have a new name, so he would be Pope something else.
He would always be Pope Pizzabella in my heart.
In my heart, but he's also super conservative, so we don't actually.
Never mind. No. Sorry, Pizzabella. But that's sort of the thing, is the old Pope in the movie anyway, and you were saying it mirrors Francis, is kind of a, it seems like a Francis figure in the sense that, you know, he toes a line between, and I think Francis did this too. He toes the line between embracing some of the liberation stuff, like the poor. And I think he was moving a little bit ahead in the sexuality stuff.
Yeah.
But he was still very bound by his Catholicism. And I think that's what we see in the movie, is that as much as they want to move forward and to keep on this train of what is kind of like a Francis figure that has just died, they're also very aware that like the church is where the church is. And as much as we want to move it, that's the Protestant church too. As much as I want to fling it into 2045, it is still in 2025. And in some ways it's still in 1955. I was going to say. So it's like,
I completely agree with you. We have to be mindful of like trying to, and I know that this is a large argument that a lot of people have about incrementalism, but like, the Catholic Church is a global community of like a billion people. It is not just the Catholics, you know, in Europe or the United States. And to say like, we just need to fling them all to the most left possible place. Like, I understand and I agree with those theological viewpoints, but that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. That's what I want. And I would want, but you're right. We can't, I also want the Southern Baptist to ordain women. And how far along are we on that train?
We're 100 years behind where we were when you tried.
Oh, 100%. Like, we're way,
it's getting worse.
It's getting worse. And you know what? It won't happen in my lifetime. I don't believe that. Now,
I don't think so.
Does it still, do I bring it up and talk about it? And it's still in my heart? Of course it is.
Well, that doesn't mean it's not worth fighting for. It's definitely
worth fighting
for.
It's certainly worth fighting for. But Francis never talked about ordaining women that I remember.
I don't think that Francis was perfect. He certainly had some views I strongly disagree with about sex and gender.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that he would entertain some things, even, you know, give positions to certain people, is a huge step forward. I don't think people realize how slowly these things work.
It is.
I mean, it wasn't until like 1970 something that the Catholic Church finally was like, okay, Protestants are not demons.
Well, it's post Vatican too. They said we're just not in full communion.
Yeah, like we're lesser brothers, but like that's 500 years.
Yeah. Thanks.
But yeah, it's definitely worth fighting for, and it's definitely worth like wanting. Yeah. I want the next pope to be more progressive than Francis was. But yeah, to like freak out about them not being, or to get stuck on just one aspect of them too, I think is.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like you have to work within the bounds that you have.
And like the options too. Yeah. Like,
absolutely. So, I mean, I think this actually leads directly into, and I'm going to say right here, you just should skip ahead because this is going to be a major spoiler alert. Major spoiler alert.
Major spoiler alert.
Who they picked as the Pope.
Yeah.
I disliked this. Because I felt like it was a cop out, in my opinion.
I want you to talk about it, and then I'm going to talk about it because I have not decided how I feel about it yet.
Okay, so here's what I feel. So here's the spoiler. They pick a pope from Mexico who is a very...
He's very young.
He's very young.
Comparatively.
Which was compared to everyone else. So he's probably like a little older than Christian.
I think he's probably like 50.
Or maybe he's our age. Hard to tell. Anyway, he kind of stands up to some of the conservative people, but he doesn't do it in a way that's like, you know, banging on the table about sex and gender, as we've spoken about. But he's from Kabul. He's the cardinal as in Afghanistan. And he's also served in the Congo and other places. And so he's seen sort of war-torn countries. And weirdly, what convinces the other cardinals that he is worthy of popedom is that he makes this kind of, well, he's slowly gaining traction, but he makes this speech against another who argues that we should be going to war specifically with Islam.
Yes, which because of the car bombing that happened. So there's a car bomb. The window blows out while they're casting a ballot. Nobody gets hurt in the conclave, but they're all talking about this.
And they kind of like make Islam their number one enemy in this group. And then he stands up and he says, let me tell you what happens when you make someone your enemy. Mm-hmm. You go to war. And war is terrible. And so he actually shifts it to something that I think really stuck with those people, which is that forget about these social issues. If we go to war, war is terrible. I don't want that. And for a reason that just shows how much people hate war, they went with him. And so they put him through. He goes through. Now, like one of the last scenes, Ralph Fiennes goes in and he's talking to the new Pope, Benitez or something like that.
Yeah, but he picks Innocent.
Innocent.
They ask him what he wants his pope name to be, and he says Innocent. So he's Pope Which Innocent.
Is, he's like Innocent the 50th or something. But yeah, like, or 50th.
15th, what? I don't know.
I said 50.
50. So I'm sure. Oh, well, it shows you there's an X and a 1. So it's like...
It's 11, right? I don't...
Well,
I
and they're writing something else. You just don't see
it. Oh, there's something else.
Okay. I mean, we could figure it out, but I'm not going to look it up.
I'm not either. So he's Innocent something. Well, then they're chatting, and the whole movie you're thought to believe that this man has some sort of intense medical condition and that he hasn't disclosed that. Because at one stage, the Pope says, clearly is in support, the Pope that has died is in support of him and wants to send him to Geneva to get some sort of thing. I thought he was dying of cancer, and I thought he was going to
the whole movie
dignitas. Like, I thought he was going to, like, self-suicide or whatever. Or suicide. I guess that's not self-suicide. It's suicide.
It's just regular
suicide. So, anyway, in this last scene, because I hate going on, is that he reveals that the procedure was to remove ovaries and a womb. Because he has that. So, my interpretation is that he's intersex.
That's my interpretation as well.
And because he said, you know, if people saw me, they would see on the outside.
Well, he does
what is present there.
He does mention that he didn't know he had a uterus until very recently.
He got his appendix taken out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it would stand to reason that he also has male sexual organs.
Yeah. So I think he has, that was my interpretation. He didn't know until later, and you'd know because it's there. But anyway,
there are reasons.
My issue with this has nothing to do with the fact that
they've accidentally chosen an intersex pope.
Right. It's not to do with that. It's that it feels, it doesn't match the rest of the movie to me. Like the rest of the movie is very, it feels like an M. Night Shyamalan just like came in at the last second and was like, ooh, here we go.
Yeah.
He's been dead the whole time. Like some sort of thing like that. So, okay. You know, and also it feels like they were trying to be more progressive than what they actually are. And I think that's the part that bothered me. It's like, oh, well, we technically poked a woman. And it's like, well, okay. Is that, I just wonder what message they were trying to put forth with that.
So
like,
here's, yeah.
And that bothered me a little because it didn't feel like it matched the rest of the movie to me.
There are two things that I thought. One is that his speech and Ralph Fiennes' earlier sermon when he talks about certainty, both were obviously like important kind of.
You're in Florida.
I know. It's always.
I'm surprised you are not a bug. You haven't coughed it out right now.
I do think that I'm becoming a bug. I think that there was like those two. So Ralph Fiennes says, I actually wrote it down because I was like, this is a lovely quote. Ralph Fiennes says, certainty is the great enemy of unity. Certainty is the deadly enemy of tolerance. Our faith is a living thing precisely because it walks hand in hand with doubt. And that partnered with the new pope, the coming up Pope's little speech about war, I thought kind of set a tone that the movie was trying to say that like we should have faith in whatever the next movement is. And from my understanding, again, obviously this would kind of fall into your theological discussion, but what I kind of felt like happened was that is God picking the next pope or God not picking the next pope, and them kind of coming out of nowhere to pick him after that speech felt like the movie is trying to say God not only is picking the next pope, but has picked an intersex pope and is therefore pushing us into progress, which I think was what the movie was trying to say. And I think it was what the movie was trying to say. Yeah. But I don't think that it did a good job of that. I really liked this movie. I really, really did. And like you said, it's not because I was like, oh no, they can't have an intersex pope. That's obviously not how I feel. But it felt more like, I don't know where he stands on any other issues. Like he never talks about himself.
It became the only defining thing other than that.
The only defining thing about him was that he was like obviously trying to stop them from going to war with the Muslims that had.
I feel like we had a far more clear understanding of all the other candidates. Yeah. And then they picked this one. And they left out some stuff for time and for our sanity, which is fine. But then you picked this guy who we were rooting for. I mean,
he seemed great. And he seemed like he had a genuine faith.
But then just to be like, we picked him. Okay, well, we're celebrating now. Now what's his issue? Oh, and also there's this. Like, I swore, I was like, I told Sarah, I was like, he's got cancer.
I know. I really thought the whole time that he was dying, but kind of, I feel like I would have preferred at least having some identity for him. It really felt like they picked him because they were all just traumatized by the car bomb. And then he gave a nice speech. And like, again, as much as I liked him throughout the movie, he always seemed like the most certain and the most like faithful of all the cardinals. Like the one, like Ralph Fiennes, I relate to a lot, but he is definitely struggling with his faith through the whole movie, you know?
Yeah, and he really didn't want it.
He doesn't want to be Pope.
He only put his name down to block the other guy. Like, yeah, I think he really wanted Stanley Tucci to get it.
And Stanley Tucci was too aggressive for me. He wants to be Pope, and I don't like that. I don't think you should want to be Pope.
Well, that they say that in the movie, that if you shouldn't...
If you want to be Pope, you shouldn't be Pope, yeah.
You shouldn't be like, Pope, right. Clearly, and then we haven't talked about... John Lithgow. It's a Third Rock from the Sun guy.
Oh my God, I love
just
that.
Just aged me right there.
John Lithgow. John Lithgow. I mean, obviously, we don't want him or the Italian Pope or the Italian Cardinal because they're both like clear. They're clearly set up as kind of caricatures of conservative people.
See, I think if the movie was trying to say that God chose that, then if God chose it, it's you got to really Calvin this out because like. And I've already said
that's what I had a problem with is that it's like almost like
there's a lot of sabotaging happen. There's a lot of sabotaging that happens for a lot of these candidates.
The whole movie is I think for the most part a really big. And I come back to Ralph Fiennes' sermon that certainty is the problem and unity is the goal, and certainty isn't going to help with unity, right? And then they have this kind of overwhelming, everybody votes for the Mexican cardinal, and now all of a sudden, oops, they've gotten an, it just felt like, yeah, it felt like they were like shoving a much more aggressive God in at the end, when the majority of the movie had been giving us like doubt is okay, and this kind of, and it almost felt like it was a cheap intersex. Like I felt a little bit offended on behalf of intersex people. Like,
well, same. It felt like, you know, they always talked about like the token black guy or the token gay person or whatever. Like, this was a token. It felt like that to me, is that they were putting that in to make for a good ending in their minds, because they wanted to say, like, yes, I don't,
they're gonna be pushed forward.
I think they wanted to, that God had chosen this person, and you could argue that God moved these men to do these things, but like, there was, when I say there's a lot of human involvement in that,
there was so much human involvement,
getting that popedom.
Honestly, I think that I would have been happier. Like, I was like, okay, that's nice when they chose him. They choose the Mexican cardinal, and I'm like, okay, that's nice. And then I kind of was like, yeah, I mean, this does feel like a step forward, because he's at least not wanting to go to war with Islam.
There's
but then
that.
They throw this thing in at the end, and it just, yeah, it just felt like a really like weird, out of place.
I think what you said about the token, and it felt like they were using that community to get some sort of message across. And yeah. I will say, one, don't use any community to get a message across. But then also, I don't think the message came across very well.
I don't either.
You had a whole movie that felt like a documentary of watching men play badly with each other. And then at the end, you get this thing that happens, and you're just like, honestly, then it felt like a movie, but it felt like a different movie than what I've been watching for an hour.
I think I would have almost been happier if we didn't see who they chose.
I think that would have been very cool.
I think that would have been like, because
like, what if they just panned out and the smoke was white and that was it?
Yeah, and that was it. That would have been a great ending. I just felt like the movie was trying to give us an understanding of how hard this is, and of how
we got it.
Even these people are struggling with their faith. Like, you can see Ralph Fiennes struggling with his faith through the whole movie. In specific, and clearly this is a man who has a strong faith, but like,
he wanted to go to the desert with Christy.
Yeah, he wants to go to the desert. He doesn't like these things anymore, and like, I just felt like that was such a great message. And then it like I said, originally I was like, okay, I guess that's interesting that they chose him, like, and he does seem like a nice, I mean, he seems very faithful, he seems very devout.
Yeah,
and then it was like, oh,
it was less about that.
Then it felt like they were shoving in
what they did with the character,
this totally different message, and I was like, now I don't know what to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about the actual Pope and
Francis.
Who are you banking on here? I'll tell you. I've seen the characters, and I've seen the stuff you've sent me about some of the comedy around who's. You know, not to offend our Catholic listeners, but there's some great comedy sketches about.
I'm just going to say that
how they're going to battle it out. But
it's hilarious about, and I don't know how you feel about this, but when Benedict decided to step down, which was the first time a Pope has ever retired and not just died, I was working in a theology department, and it was a big deal. Like, everyone was freaking out, and we were very Protestant. Again, it's a bunch of Protestants talking about Catholicism, so.
Yeah, but the majority of Christians are Catholic. So, I mean, it's a big.
Yeah. But it was like, this is a big deal. I can't believe, like, we're about to enter into another time period of having two popes, and like, how is this going to play out, and blah, blah. And then they chose Francis. And I was really excited, because Jesuit liberation theologian. Like, but I got to say that this time around, there is a lot more internet gold happening.
Totally.
The memes and the videos.
We have moved forward in our internet game. And here is what I think, because I think we do this in America. So we are bad at moderation, and I've spoken about that before. And I think we will get a conservative pope.
So this is
what
I assumed initially. My knee-jerk reaction was, we're going to have a conservative pope, because just like after Obama, the country, this is a uniquely like specific, we as a country are bad at progress.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if that, right. But I also read somewhere, and I don't, again, I am not an expert in this, but I read somewhere that the cardinals that vote in the conclave are all assigned by Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. And so there's a chance, it's not a guarantee for sure, but there's a chance that another progressive pope would be likely, because a lot of these cardinals are in line with more of Francis's vision. But again, I don't know that. I'm speaking out of mostly ignorance there. So that's the only thing that gives me some hope. Mm-hmm. I have also seen that that two of the front runners are Francis's like right-hand man guy, who is an Italian pope. And this brings back that conversation, or an Italian cardinal, sorry, because there have been mostly Italian popes, that the Catholic Church wants to like throw liberals a bone by not having more European or especially Italian ones. And so then they would go to, you know, either the more conservative African popes or cardinals or something like that. But then there's that Filipino that's also in the running, which would be the first ever Asian pope. So that's interesting.
Where does he stand on social issues?
He, I have seen, is more progressive than Francis. Oh. So if I got to vote in the conclave, that's who I would probably vote for.
Well, you would be making pasta in the conclave, as we saw in the movie. I did like seeing Isabella Rossellini.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
She was amazing. She was married to my favorite David Lynch for a while.
She was.
After Blue Velvet. Yep, they got together. Either dated or married. I think they were married actually for a while, but yeah, so it was good to see her just again, because I remember seeing her during award season and having no idea why she was there. I'm mad about it, but didn't know what she was doing.
I'm gonna be honest, it took me a while to recognize her in the movie. If you had said to me Isabella Rossellini is in this movie, you need to find her, I think it would have taken me a while.
I thought she was gonna, yeah, well, I mean, she got older and
she got older and she's a nun. That kind of really,
yeah. I mean, she's usually like, at least in all of David Lynch's films, she's like this mysterious sexy cocktail singer of some persuasion that's gonna take you on a journey somewhere. I thought she would have more of a role, which is maybe the point, a point within the movie as well, is that she actually she stands up to them at one stage, she stands up to them a couple times, but one time she like commands the whole room and kind of,
she's a pretty strong presence.
She is, but she just doesn't move she doesn't do much in it, like as a key role player in the whole story. And she's a very big actress for her to just, I do love how she, two scenes that were so badass of her was of course when she was like, hey, cardinals, shut up for a minute. And then the other one was when she logged onto a computer and walked out. So there's this important document that's on the computer and she's still like maintaining her, like, I guess, innocence in this. And so she logs on and Ray Fiennes is in the room and she just walks out and leaves it for
him. You know
what?
It's the most, I think, like, this is the most realistic depiction of how women have affected history throughout time, is because like, we know we can't do the big thing. You know, that has to come from a man because patriarchy, but we can do something. And like, women are going to find the something, you know? And I liked that.
My other favorite line was Stanley Tucci saying, he goes, aw, thank you very much, no. Ray Fiennes, because he's like, and it's just this so sassy. And I said, I told Stuart, I was like, next time any boss of mine tells me to do something I don't want to do, I'm just going to be like, oh, thank you very much. No.
I love Stanley Tucci so much. I love so many, like, I love John Lithgow. I love so many of the actors.
Oh, the actors were
everybody
phenomenal.
Did brilliant. Yeah. It was like truly, and there's truly some stuff that I was like, this is a brilliant, brilliant movie. So qualms about the ending is one thing, but it was a brilliant movie in general. But
what do you think, and this was a question that I had in my head, what do you think the role of the Pope is in the actual Pope, not the makeup Pope, in sort of global Christianity? Like, what do you think? Do you think that the role has diminished, or do you think that the role is still very important? Because you can look at all this and be like, man, this is a lot of to-do for the leader. I mean, arguably the biggest.
You could argue for the diminishment, because certainly it is not as if it was in the days when the Pope said something and people just had to go along with it, you know?
Right. Yep.
Like Francis argued for quite a lot of very progressive Catholic, like stances in terms of economics and women and LGBT issues. Like he was outspoken about his views on things, but there were a lot of cardinals that were like, no, he's wrong. And so that, I think, yes, you can argue that it's been diminished, but I do think that it's one of those things where he's still going to have obviously a really like significant impression on how people understand certain things. And I think also that it, and I have said this about a lot of things, but I think that it, I think we have to be aware of what kinds of actual impacts having a symbol is. Like if your symbol of your church is progressive, no matter what that symbol does or doesn't do during their time, that is going to move the church forward. If the symbol is conservative, it is going to move it back, you know?
Him meeting J.D. Vance in his face the whole time, where yes. He was like, it wasn't even that he was mad. He was just disappointed.
He was just
like, really?
He was like,
he looked like he had smelled the worst thing you could smell.
He looked like he was like, oh no, I'm going to die now.
Yeah. I know. I was just like, and then he died like a couple days later or something. I was like,
the oh next day. It was the next day.
Here we go. I mean,
J.D. Vance.
Maybe, you know, maybe same. Maybe same.
Still the Pope. It's possible. I'm not saying it's.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think that's right. I think it signals something.
It signals something. And that's signaling things is important. Performance, symbolism, all of those things is actually important. And it does do things. We are in a kind of weird state of culture where we think that performance is meaningless, but it's not. And symbols are not meaningless. And so, yeah, like regardless of what the Pope does or does not do, or regardless of how much authority the Pope actually has, having a more progressive Pope is important because it will move the church. It will.
I agree.
And it will move the Protestants, I think.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think it signals to the rest of the, it gives a signal to the rest of the world, much like America used to, I would say.
Yeah.
About politics. Yeah.
And maybe now still does, but in the opposite, like Canada,
yeah, it's a warning.
Canada's election, thank God,
yeah,
went the way it did, but was 100 days ago not going to go that way, you know?
Yep, 100%. Well, but Lindsey Graham of our neighbors to the south just thinks that old DT needs to be Pope next. God.
I feel like Lindsey Graham actually thinks, like, I think that was a serious thing he said.
He is not a clever dude. I mean, I have a southern accent, so it has nothing to do with that. But that man just needs to go to a
I have a question. Okay. Because we do want to also honor dear Pope Francis.
We do.
What is your favorite thing about Francis?
Well, I love that he picked Francis the name.
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's great. I don't know a ton about saints, but I know that Francis was sort of known for kindness and gentleness and
animals.
Is oftentimes in gardens with the birds. The
animals, yeah.
Yeah, the animals. Like
he's the
patron saint of animals
or something like that, yeah.
I think so. I think there was some miracle related to that. And
yeah.
So I like that name, but also I liked that he... You know, I always say this about, especially my mom. So my mom grew up really conservative Southern Baptist. I mean, well, she grew up in Georgia. She grew up the way she had to grow up. Like, that's the way she was. But I always love talking to my mom because she'll feels like her faith and her theological stuff is a journey. It's not like she's deconstructed. It's, mm-mm. You know, it's not this big one event that's happened. It's like she's slowly moving through her life and history and things are changing, but they're mm-hmm. changing at her pace and they're changing in her mind. And she believes them to be true, especially in regards to like social issues. I feel like the thing I liked about Francis is that as I watched him, I felt like that was what he was doing. Like I felt like he came in with his liberation stuff that was on the poor. But as the years went on, you know, I think that he was on a journey of both self-discovery and theological discovery. And I think that that signaled a lot to the rest of the world, especially in regards, I think he did some stuff about trans people at the end.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like that took, it took his whole papacy to get there, but he got there, or at least he was on his way there, it seems like.
Yeah.
So I think I appreciate that because it is like kind of watching someone do it at their own pace. Like, you know, not just have the trap door go and they're just like, you know, they fall right through. Yeah. And then they're left with nothing. Sometimes you have to deconstruct at a slower rate in a way that fits your life. And I feel like that's what he did. Also, I like that he snuck out of the Vatican in the middle of the night to go hang out with people.
Yes.
I heard that story. That could be a rumor, but I don't know.
I heard that too. I know this to be true. He called the Christian church in Gaza every night at 7 p.m. He called them since everything has started. He's been calling the church
the Christian church in Gaza. One.
You know, whatever, whichever one. I can't, I don't know, but.
No, I don't either. I just like the idea that there's just like.
I like the idea that he felt like a real person.
Yeah.
And not a caricature or. Oftentimes I think that celebrities have become so fake that they aren't actually people anymore. Like there's something about them that they've lost a like human quality because all you know is the kind of brand that they're putting forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think that this has been true of a lot of popes as well. Like the bubble car that they used to drive around.
The Pope Mobile
and like the outfits and everything. Like you just like, what is real about this human, you know? So when I was in, I went to visit my friend who was living in Italy. This was in 2014. So it was a year after Francis became the Pope. And my mom was a big fan, weirdly, because again, very Protestant. She was a big fan of the Pope. It was hard
not to like him, I think.
It was hard not to like. I mean, he just really was a lovable person. But she told me, because I was going to Rome, and she was like, you're going to see the Pope. And I was like, that's a crazy thing to say. Nobody just sees the Pope. Like, he's not just walking the streets, you know?
Well, this one might be.
And then I actually, so long story short, but we ended up in St. Peter's Square and he was riding a Segway around the square blessing people.
Yeah, he was.
And
I love that so much.
It was this insane moment of my life where I was like, firstly, I think my mom might be a witch. And secondly, like the Pope is riding a Segway completely unprotected. In a humongous mass of people, and he's just going around blessing them as he passes. And it was such a beautiful thing to see. And I have one really terrible picture that I'll put on the Instagram.
Where yeah, I always get kind head. Of jealous. I kind of get jealous of the Catholics for a multitude of reasons. But one of them is this idea that you have this figurehead. And it would be nice sometimes. Now, nice and not so nice, you know, going from Benedict to Francis, like Francis, yes, Benedict, no, you know.
Yeah.
So I can see why the Protestant church didn't want this figurehead because mm-hmm. they do signal so much to the rest of the Christian community. But when you get a Francis, I do get,
when you get a
quite
Francis,
jealous
because
yeah. I'm like, man, what if wouldn't that was our spokesperson? Yeah.
I want a Francis.
Yeah. But I don't want to have to wait I don't want to wait for another Francis to come along. And based on that movie, again, I don't know how much of this is, you know, and yeah. The Catholics will say it's all coming from God and that God is dictating the actions of people. So you can cover it with that theological maneuver, which is fine, very Calvin, but it's fine, you know. But I think it clearly the social context in this instance is not just me spouting it, but does have stuff to do with who becomes Pope. Like, I mean, there is a little influence there alongside, you know, this sort of omniscient leading, which I do have to believe as well for the Catholics is a part of it too.
Yep.
So anyway, in the movie, y'all did well. So let's fingers crossed that it happens in real life.
Everybody.
What if Ray Fiennes just showed up as like his human self and just at the Vatican dressed like that. And he was like, well, guys, I'm here to lead this.
They're
like,
I'm going to lead the conclave.
I'm gonna
I did
leave
it really
content.
Well that first time. So I am excited to see what happens. But
Me too. And, yeah. And blessings and heartfelt love to all of you Catholics out there. I know this has been a sad time for people and honestly a sad time for a lot of Protestants too. You know, we are, no matter what Vatican II says, we are all the family of Christ. I almost said brothers and sisters, but based on this conversation, the family of Christ. So no document can take that away from us. So we feel great feelings of your loss and honestly our loss because.
Mm-hmm. He was a great figure for all of Christianity, honestly.
I agree.
And honestly, a very unifying figure. I don't know any other pope that has had so many like trans-denominational following.
Well, hopefully we can do a follow-up that is not like the election follow-up.
Yeah, let's hope for that.
So, guys, so just some admin stuff is that there is 2 weeks left on early bird tickets for Theology Beer Camp, which Christy and I will be at. I already got my plane ticket.
We're very excited.
And then just buy me a jacket trip. That's all I ask. Want one of those Canadian goose feather jackets that I see all the Northerners wear when they come down here to visit. So there's that, but there's also our BAM book club. So come join us. Come be a part of the group. I was going to say cult, but that's already been taken.
Still. Yes, come join our BAM book group. We're going to announce the books and the date shortly.
Yeah. We'll give you like a month to read it.
Yeah. It'll be a very good time.
You get to hang out with all of us. And, you know, we had a really good discussion. And honestly, it's the first book I've ever read with Stuart. And having him in there, I was like, all right. Like,
I think, I really love being able to talk about books with people because it's a great way of not just like talking about current events, but also talking about like, you know, how does something speak to you in your personal life or what kinds of things do you like or not like? It's a good way to get to know people.
It's a great way to get to know people.
Yeah.
My friend group in Charlotte started out as a book group and now it still is kind of, but now we're just friends. It's a little harder to do the book stuff because we're just like, so tell me about what you did last night on that date instead of tell me about the plot of this book. Anyway, guys, we will see you later because all right. Bye, y'all.
Yay. We did it.